All right, I call to order the May 2nd Board of Ethics meeting. 6:30 p.m. is the time. And let's start with introductions. My name is Joseph Atkinson, Vice Chair and Board Member. Go ahead, Bill.
Bill Sims, current Board Member.
Ohad Lowy, current Board Member.
Linda Batway, new Board Member.
Okay. Were you going to take roll call?
Oh, no, we just did.
Okay.
My name is Doris Sorman. I'm the city clerk.
Okay.
And I'm Martha Lance, and I'm the city attorney advisor to the board.
Okay. Thank you all. So our first order of business is to elect the chair of the Board of Ethics. And as we know, Sean was term limited out, and he was a great chair. So we have to elect a new one to run the meetings. And
that's governed by your administrative procedures. Section 1.5, the board shall annually elect a chairperson and a vice chairperson to take office on January 1 or as soon thereafter as is practicable. So that's now. And as has been noted, the vice chair, who is currently Mr. Atkinson, acts as the chairperson in the absence of the chair or in the case of a vacancy of the chair. But in this case, the chair is not only vacant, but his position has expired, so we'll need to elect a new chair and a new vice chair should the current vice chair be elected chair. So with that, you can take nominations for chair.
So I would nominate Joe as chairman.
Okay, any discussion?
I'll second.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm happy to step in and do it. So,
Joe, since I'm new, could you please tell me about your background as on this committee?
Sure. Well, I've been on this committee for, this is my second term, so this will be my fourth year. My professional background is I work in Olympia as a legislative aide. I'm also a real estate broker. My wife and I are small business owners, and I have a lot of experience, about 5.5 years working down in Olympia. So I have a little bit of experience with legislative ethics and campaign ethics and all that stuff, so I thought it would be a good committee for me to serve on down here. I also serve as the president of the Ruston Point Defiance Business District, so I enjoy serving wherever I can, so that's pretty much it. So. Okay, so we got a...
I guess you could ask if there are any other nominations.
Are there any other nominations?
I guess, do I move to close nominations?
You can do that.
I would move to close nominations.
Okay. Everybody in favor?
We need a second. We need a second, yeah.
Okay.
Second.
I second that.
Okay.
All in favor of electing me
no,
as
we need
the chair?
We're closing nominations.
Okay.
That's your motion. So.
Okay.
All in favor
of closing nominations, say aye.
Right.
Aye.
Okay.
All opposed.
Opposed? No opposed?
Okay, now you've got your motion. Nominations are closed, and you can vote on the election of the chair.
Okay, so everybody in favor of electing myself, Joe Atkinson, as chair, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So the next order of business, electing a vice chair. I think we should, I nominate Bill as the vice chair.
Sounds like collusion.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Linda would probably like to know a little bit about me.
I would.
Yeah,
you.
Me too.
Me too. So, long-term Tacoma residents. I've been in the same house for over 40 years. In South Tacoma. 32 years at Boeing, retired 5 years ago. Actually taught some ethics. Worked mostly in the last 15 years in... employee and leadership development. Actually did some traveling, teaching for some ethics folks. So Boeing is very strong on ethics. We have an annual ethics. Everybody has to sign. Everybody has to go through the training. So ethics background is pretty strong. And this is my second partial term.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any other nominations?
So, just because I don't know anything about you, can we have a moment? What's your background with the committee? You're not being nominated.
Well, this is my first meeting.
Okay.
So that's my background.
Same as
well.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, I'm an assistant attorney general. I Currently, I advise state agencies on labor and employment issues that can touch ethics issues as well.
Okay. How long have you worked for the AG's office?
13 years.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
And as long as we're going around the table, Linda.
I'm retired. I've been living in Tacoma for 25 years. My profession was I was a master's social worker. I directed hospital social work departments primarily, and I helped to start a medical ethics, which is a bit different, but a medical ethics program at the hospital I was working at, at Harrison in Bremerton, and I also in my national work with hospital social work directors also did some work in teaching ethics classes and teaching at my hospital. So,
cool.
But medical ethics, a bit different.
Thank you, Linda. Okay. Are there any other nominations?
I would move to close nominations.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor of closing nominations, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Oppose? For an aye, no oppose. Okay. So all in favor of approving Bill Seams as the vice chair of the Tacoma Ethics Board, say aye.
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 Oppose? All right, unanimous. We have a chair and a vice chair, so thank you very much.
And we have one more position to be filled. Is that no? We don't.
Yeah,
know.
Doris.
One.
Can you fill the board in on the position. Status of
on the board?
Board.
Yes,
board
yes.
Board
there is
position.
One more board member that will need to be filled. We have some. We have a member. We have a person, an individual going before the Government Performance and Finance Committee, I believe, on Wednesday. They will do the interview process, the same process the two of you went through, and then depending on how that works out, you know, they may forward his name, or we may go out and search for some more members. So it'll sort of depend on. He was supposed to come the same time you did, but he had a conflict, and so they liked what they saw in his application, so they wanted him to come forward and do an interview. So we're sort of waiting for that process. So it'll be probably, if all that goes through, maybe about the 24th of May will be when it'll be before the City Council. So just by the end of the month.
Thank you.
Okay.
But we have a quorum so we can conduct business.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5-member commission, so a quorum is 3.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next agenda item is approval of the minutes from those 3 dates that we have in our packet. So we have April 8, 2015. Please take a second to review.
Pardon me? Yes, I need them all. Yeah, but I have them in paper if you need them.
Let's see them together, please.
All right, so just take a second to review, please. And if anybody has any changes, please let us know. And everything looks fine to me, so whenever everybody is done reviewing, if I could get a motion to approve the April 8 minutes.
Having been there, I would so approve. That
okay. All right. Second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay?
Abstain.
Okay. The April 8 minutes are approved. Moving on, April 29, 2015 minutes. Okay, any discussion? All right, could I get a motion to approve?
Approve the April 29 minutes also.
And I'll second.
Okay. Everybody all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Same.
Okay. Moving on, August 6, 2015 minutes. All right, any discussion? Could I have a motion to approve?
I move to approve here.
And I'll second.
Thank you. All right, all in favor of approving the August 6, 2015 minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Oh,
sorry. All right. Now moving on to number five, Open Government Training Act and Ethics Training.
Yep. Let's see if we can work this out. Okay.
And of course. City staff has prepared a presentation.
Yeah.
I can do that for you.
Okay.
Okay. So this is a presentation that we give to new members of city boards and commissions, as well as a periodic refresher to current members of boards and commissions. And it's pretty generic, so bear with me if it doesn't all seem like it, you know, it's completely tailored to your work. But for consistency, we wanted to give the same presentation to all of the boards and commissions so everybody's on the same page. And we're doing this in go to the next slide. Under a new addition to the state of open government laws, the Public Records Act and the Open Meeting Act have both been amended recently to specifically require public members of boards and commissions to be given open government training. So the city is doing it for all of our committees, boards, and commissions, including you guys. Although we did that as a city best practice long before the legislature declared that we had to, so it's something that we do for a long time, but that's the context for giving it both to the new members and to the current members. On the next slide. First act is the Open Public Meeting Act, and that governs all of your meetings as a body. That act applies to all commissions, boards, and committees that are part of city government, and it basically says that all meetings are public, and it doesn't have to be called a meeting. It applies to workshops, retreats, study sessions, things like that, where a quorum of a body is gathered to conduct business. Next slide. Again, a meeting is, regardless of what you call it, it occurs when you take action. An action is any official business. It's very broadly defined in the Act. So it doesn't have to be just voting or final action to be part of a public meeting requirement. It can be deliberation, receipt of testimony, consideration, discussion. Doesn't have to be final action subject to a vote. The Open Meeting Act can also apply to meetings of subcommittees. That would depend on the number of people on your subcommittee. This is such a small commission that you're not likely to have a subcommittee that would trigger the Open Meeting Act, because you wouldn't likely have a quorum. You'd probably be more likely to break off in pairs or even just be assigned individual work if you were going to do work to bring back to the body. But if there's three or more of you on a subcommittee, the same requirements would apply. The requirements of the Open Meeting Act are notice to the public, so everybody, there's a published notice of this meeting, a published agenda at the same time that the clerk's office noted the meeting, the agenda was circulated. The public is permitted to attend. There they are. We have public. There's no requirements, however, that the public be allowed to participate in the meeting. The requirement in state law is limited to attendance. Minutes are required to be taken at an open public meeting, and topics are generally limited to your published agenda. There's some exceptions if you're a sitting body that has regular meetings, but generally stick to the topics that are on your agenda. Like I was starting to say, a regular meeting is subject to a recurring schedule. That probably doesn't apply to this group, because we try to schedule regular quarterly meetings, but we also would convene special meetings from time to time as needed to conduct business. So you can go to the next slide. That talks about special meetings, which is a meeting that's not a regularly scheduled meeting of a body. When you have a special meeting, you have a few more notice requirements that are triggered. You have to notice the meeting at least 24 hours in advance. And in this type of meeting, it's very certain that the agenda has to be stuck to. You can't take final action on a matter in a special meeting unless it's on your agenda. So you can't vote on something in a special meeting that isn't on your agenda. And again, meetings of this type are subject to minutes being taken, and the minutes are open to public inspection. The Open Public Meeting Act can be triggered by something other than a gathering of live bodies. Email can do that. There's been some court cases that talk about how email exchanges of a certain type could be considered to be triggering a meeting. So if the entire body or a quorum of the body is participating in an email discussion, that could be constituted as a meeting because, you know, you're taking action, you're having a discussion, and the public doesn't have an opportunity to attend or get involved in that email exchange. So you'll get communications from staff, from Doris, and she'll usually remember to put on there, don't reply to all. That's the reason. The best practice is to communicate anything that you need to communicate back out to the rest of your fellow members back through the staff person so we don't run into the reply all issues. And same thing with serial emails. There's been some court cases that talk about if somebody says, I'm going to do this, and then you forward it to the next person, you need to do this, you need to do this. Essentially, you've taken a vote by the end of that exchange, and that could constitute a meeting as well. There's also some discussions about how gathering virtually, like in a blog or a chat room or Facebook or something like that, where the whole board was present and doing something that was action, not just, you know, not just listening or receiving or seeing things, but doing something that would constitute that broad definition of action, that too could be a meeting. So that kind of thing is just things to watch out for. Meetings can be by telephone. If for some reason one of you couldn't participate, you could appear by telephone. And in fact, if the whole board wanted to conduct a telephone meeting, we can do that. But the way we do that is still give public notice, and we'd still have to give the public an opportunity to attend that meeting. So we might set up a speakerphone or something and actually put out a meeting notice where people could come and listen. The law changed in the last legislative session that says a knowing violation of the Open Meeting Act is subject to a $1,000 penalty. For years, since the 70s when this act was passed, it had been a $100 penalty. So the legislature raised it now to a $1,000 penalty for a knowing violation of the Open Meeting Act by a board member. And that penalty would go against an individual board member. And of course, you know, nobody wants that, but we also want to be careful that we don't violate the act because we'd have to do things over again, because an action taken improperly outside of a meeting or not in a properly noted meeting would be null and void, so we'd have to start over anyway. And we could also have, of course, problems with public trust and media coverage and all of those things that we want to avoid. So bad media coverage, not good media coverage, we'll take that anytime. But so that's why Doris's office manages all of the meetings and all of the meeting notices for the boards and commissions. So the second act is the Public Records Act, and this one was passed at the same time as the Public Meetings Act. Actually, the Meeting Act, the Open Records Act, and the state campaign finance laws that are now administered by the Public Disclosure Commission, those were all part of a package of an initiative that was passed by the people in the 70s in 1972, and now they're broken apart into three separate acts. This act applies to city boards and commissions as well, and it creates a duty to retain, to search, and to produce public records, records that you make or that you receive in the context of your work on a city board or commission. A record is very broadly defined. It's information or communication relating to the conduct of government or the performance of a government function, so the work that you do on this committee would definitely fall under that. If it's owned, used, or retained by the body itself or by the board members, And it can be, a record can be any medium. It doesn't have to be a piece of paper. It can be electronic, it can be audio, it can be photos, videos, social media posts. Any of those things can constitute records. And this is important for your work as volunteers. Public records can include records of city business that aren't kept by the city, so records that you might keep on your personal computer or on your phone for purposes of conducting your business on this board, or records, paper records if you have a file and you take it home and you know, put it in your desk drawer. Those are still public records, even if they're not kept on city premises or in cities. The Public Records Act does give the public the right to view or make copies of public records upon request. There are exemptions to disclosure. They're relatively narrow, the exemptions, and they're to be applied narrowly, and the presumption is in favor of disclosure. And requesters can't be asked or limited in the reasons for their request. The city is entitled to ask for clarification and try to, you know, help give the fullest assistance to try to help get the requester what they want, but we aren't entitled to ask why they need it or what they're going to do with it. That's not part of the Public Records Act. So if records are requested of this of individual board members or of the board itself, we will ask you to search all potential locations. We'll tell you what the records are that are being looked for. We'll ask you to search places where they might be, and we'll ask you to produce anything that you find to the staff, and the staff will review it. There might be exemptions, but we ask that everything be collected and brought to staff, and then we'll review it to see if there's anything that should be redacted or withheld. And if you should happen to receive a communication in your work on this board that you think might be a public records request, if it doesn't happen to come through staff, if it comes to one of you directly, please let Doris know promptly, because we have deadlines surrounding that. So it can come in that way, and then we would be obligated to take care of it. So don't sit on something if you see something like that. Or if you're not sure and you have questions, feel free to give us a call. So the Public Records Act has violation enforcement mechanisms, but unlike the Meeting Act, the enforcement here and the violations run to the city itself, not to the individual board member. There's penalties that could be assessed by a court for the city's failure to conduct an adequate search. The court could order a search if it got to a court case where the court felt that the city hadn't adequately looked. The court could order the city to go out and look places to find records, including records of people that are serving as volunteers. Like I was saying earlier, the record is the record, regardless of where you keep it. So what we like to advise people to do, and I'd already talked with OHAD about this earlier, is to set up an email account that you use just for this work. So a Gmail or something like that. And then try to keep all of your communications and everything related to your work on this board in that one place. That helps you to look for them, and it helps you to keep organized to do your work on the committee. But it also helps us that if we do have to find something and look for something, that it'll be easy for you to find it and easy for you to look for it. And the city's defense to these types of lawsuits, should there be one, is that we have procedures and we make a good faith effort, including things like doing these sorts of trainings, giving the advice that I just gave to, you know, help you manage your records. All of those things would be considered by a court to establish and show that the city's making a good faith effort to comply with these laws and rules. So the flip side to public disclosure is records management. And this law says that not only do we have to look for and produce records, but if they are public records, we have to retain them. And those can consist of records of boards and commissions as well. For records retention, the owner of the record, the creator, the minder, the entity that has the responsibility for it, is usually the one who has the retention obligation. You might have some obligation over some records if you were doing something where you created something that wasn't generated by the city or wasn't an informational copy generated by the city, but I think that's going to be pretty rare. In most cases, what you'll be getting and having would be secondary copies or informational copies. if you do create records, what we would ask is that you let us know that you've done that, and we can help you decide if they have retention value, and then we would institute a process to transfer those records back to the city. So we would then become the keeper and have the custody of them. The next slide. So the retention periods are set by the state and by the city. We can set our own retention periods as long as they're not any less stringent than those set by the state. But some records don't have any retention value. They're transitory. And that generally means that your business need for those records evaporates when you read it or used it or printed it, you know, whatever. Come to the meeting tomorrow. You come. The meeting's over. You don't need that record anymore. You've exhausted or its business purpose. And that's a transitory record. You can feel free to dispose of it. You can delete it after that point. If it's a paper record, you can throw it away. You can recycle it, whatever you need to do. Also, for records management purposes, as I was saying, if records are truly transitory, when you don't need them anymore, you really should take some steps to clean them out and discard them. Because if you don't have an obligation to keep them, it's just going to help everyone manage them should we have to look for them. And as I was saying earlier, informational and secondary copies, so your copy of the agenda, Doris would, and the clerk's office would be the official keeper of that agenda. Everybody else would have a copy. So if you don't need your copy of something anymore, you can dispose of it. If we generate a lot of records and that they're sitting around, even if they could have been dealt with or disposed of, and we have to look for them, the downside is that we'll have to look through things that we didn't need to keep in the first place. So just something to think about. Again, making records, you shouldn't, in this role, really be doing that too much, I wouldn't think, but just be aware that, you know, we talked about the broad definition of record. If somehow you're acting as a body or doing the business of the body in some other forum, that could be considered a record, just as acting as the body and, you know, over email could be considered a meeting. And there's no general exemption for privacy, so if you're, you know, if there's a record of that somebody's made that was ill-advised, an email that, you know, is the business of your body, and then somebody says something, which you would never do, somebody says something terrible about one of their fellow commissioners in the body of the email, and they're sorry that they did it, but they, you know, we wouldn't be able to redact any of that stuff. Once it's in the record, it's in the record. Again, I did advise that it's a great idea to make a separate email account, keep separate folders for your business on this commission, so things don't get intermingled with either your work emails or your work records, or your personal records if you're retired. So again, that's, and we can help you figure out how to do that if you have questions. The last thing I wanted to touch on, which is interesting for you and your role, is the city's code of ethics. That code applies. Not only do you, in your role on this board, have the authority to interpret it and apply it and make recommendations regarding it, you are also bound by it. And the code of ethics applies to all city employees, board elected officials, as well as board and commission members. And its purposes include, generally, avoiding conflicts of interest and undue influence, to prevent use of the city position for powers and personal gain, and to avoid improprieties, just to encourage all dealings to be open and upfront. And some of the specifically prohibited conduct that might be implicated in your work, there's a prohibition against disclosure of confidential information should you, in this role, or any city officer or employee, learn something that is confidential or implicates privacy interests of another. Medical information might be an example, something like that. You would have a duty not to disclose it. use of city positions for personal benefit or gain, going out into the public and saying, I'm a member of the city's Board of Ethics. Please take me out for dinner and pay for it. Can't imagine. But acceptance of gifts, there's a general ban on acceptance of gifts in any amount. So flip side of that scenario, someone comes around and says, you know, I'd love to take you out for dinner. Let me pay. That would be something that would be a gift, and we wouldn't do that. There's an exception for nominal promotional items. If somebody wants to give you a ballpoint pen or a pad of paper, you could probably take that. And then the other thing that the Code of Ethics touches on is financial conflicts of interest. So serving in a particular role for the city, but also maybe contracting for the city. If you have a business that does that has contracts with the city, that could implicate some financial conflicts of interest that we'd want to be aware of and look into. As I said, you are covered. If there is a complaint, there would be a review by the Board of Ethics, and because the Board of Ethics has the authority over complaints against covered officials, which include members of boards and commissions, if one of you was complained against, I'm not sure how we'd handle that. You certainly couldn't sit on the panel of your own complaint, but the other board members would be charged with adjudicating that. And the board's jurisdiction is over, as I said, covered officials. So you have jurisdiction over complaints against elected officials, the city manager, the director of utilities, as well as members of boards and commissions. And other complaints that are against city employees, they're all bound by the same code. But regular city employees, their complaints regarding the code of ethics for them are investigated by the utilities director if they're utility employees, or the city manager if they're general government employees. So you don't have jurisdiction over complaints regarding city employees, and that's different than some jurisdictions. I know the Pierce County Board of Ethics sits over all ethics complaints, including employees, but your jurisdiction is limited to covered officials. If a complaint's filed, it generates a review by the Board of Ethics, which is what we're going to get into tonight on our agenda. There's various possibilities of how those complaints can be resolved. They can be dismissed. You can convene a hearing or an investigation to find out further information. And ultimately, whether it's dismissed or you have a hearing and you make a finding, this board would need to issue an order. And some of the sanctions that this board would have authority could include recommendations. In the case of elected officials, you only have the power to make recommendations. And they're all listed in the code, but this body does not have any authority to unseat or even impose reprimands or admonitions or anything, or fines or anything like that against elected officials. You have the power to make a recommendation to the council that a particular sanction be considered. You can also make recommendations if you were hearing a case involving members of boards and commissions. You could make a recommendation to the council that board or commission member, if there was a finding against them, would be asked to step down and no longer be a member of the board or commission. So that, I think, is it. Are there any questions?
I don't
think there's not a provision for questions from the audience at this point.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
So, some agencies have a provision for public records that says to request a public record, you have to submit it to this specific person. Tacoma mm-hmm. does not have that.
We do have a process that we ask people to follow, but we don't have it set up that if you fail to do that, it's supposed to come in through the clerk's office to the public disclosure officer, or if it's. But if we get a request, we don't not answer it because it didn't come that way. That was a quadruple negative, sorry. Any other questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation.
Sure. And of course, if you have any questions at any time, always feel free to call.
Okay.
Now we are on agenda item number 6.
Okay. So the board is in receipt of complaint number 2016-002 regarding Marilyn Strickland. The chair requests that the deputy attorney advise the board on the process regarding this complaint.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This particular complaint was filed on March 22nd, 2016. You've been provided a copy of the communication that is what the complaint consists of. It was filed by Claudia Riedner in the form of an email sent to the city attorney, Elizabeth Polly, and it indicated, the communication indicated the complainant's desire to file an official complaint against the mayor. And the matter was processed as a complaint under the Code of Ethics, was assigned complaint number 2016-002. And the complaint alleges specific facts, consisting of the fact that the City of Tacoma acted as lead SEPA agency for the proposed methanol facility, that the mayor actively promoted the project in a video, and I think that there was a link to that video, mm-hmm. and that the mayor stated that she or the council could not take a stance on the project as the city is the lead agency for the environmental review process. So those are the facts alleged. The board has administrative procedures that have been adopted, and I think the new members were provided a copy of those as well. And in section 2.3, the board has a process for review of complaints. And 2.3, subsection 3, states that the city attorney or assigned deputy city attorney, as legal advisor to the board, shall make an initial review for legal sufficiency of all complaints received. And where in the opinion of the city attorney, the complaint A alleges facts which, even if true, would not constitute a violation of the Code of Ethics, or B concerns matters over which the board has no jurisdiction, the city attorney shall issue an opinion via email to all members of the board that dismissal under the Tacoma Municipal Code, the Code of Ethics, 1.46.045F(2)(a) appears appropriate. After consideration of that complaint, along with the city attorney's opinion, a concurrence of a majority of a quorum of the board by return email shall be required for dismissal. Normally, as that procedure suggests, the review process is conducted by email, but because this board was not fully filled and new members were being appointed at the time that this complaint came in, we determined that the initial review process would be communicated to board members in person in an adjudicative session, which is a closed session that is under the Open Meeting Act. Closed sessions are allowed under RCW 42.30.130.2, and those closed sessions are allowed for the purpose of allowing a quasi-judicial action, quasi-judicial agency, an agency that has the authority to make determinations involving named persons, can conduct that adjudication and that deliberation in a closed session. So at this point, I've advised on the process, and the chair can now ask the board to go into a closed session.
Okay, so the board will now go into a closed session for the purpose of receiving legal advice relating to a quasi-judicial matter between the named parties and for the purpose of deliberating regarding complaint number 2016-002. This closed session is authorized by RCW 42.30.140, Section 2. At this time, all persons except board members, the city clerk, and the deputy attorney, please leave the room.
Do we need a time? No,
you don't need time in an adjudicating session. But
we'll record. Yeah, I ran out of batteries. Got like a stack of them. So I'm good.
Okay, so remember, you're in a public meeting, so.
And how should we conduct ourselves being in a public meeting?
Just to allow the chair to call it back to order would be great.
Great.
Okay. Right, so we are now in open session. So So after deliberation, the board has determined that complaint number 2016-002 will be dismissed according to Tacoma Municipal Code 1.46.045F2A, as the complaint does not allege facts which, if presumed true, are sufficient to constitute a violation of the Code of Ethics. So we have discussed, and if there's any public comment, we could hear public comment if anybody has any comments. If you could keep your comments short, if you have them to 2 or 3 minutes, that would be great.
Sure.
Thank you, ma'am.
Allow me. My name is Claudia Vietnam. I'm the person who filed the complaint. And I am, in a way, I'm surprised that you would say there's no sufficient evidence. You have seen the video, I would imagine? Okay. So, according to Tacoma Ethics Code 146.010A, carrying out their public duties, avoid any improprieties in their roles as public servants, including the appearance of impropriety, undue influence, or conflict of interest. So, in a sense, when Marilyn Strickland, our mayor, said that they could not speak about the methanol refinery, she said so in a public meeting, and that was... I get my bearing here. That was a February City Council meeting, the public forum. She said, what we're saying is that we cannot influence what staff is doing. They need to do this objectively. Regardless of whether or not you support the methanol plant, staff have a responsibility to look at this completely objective, based on facts, based on science, and based on potential impact. Our job is to make sure that we have something that has integrity and is neutral. Those were her very words in a public forum after there was a few hours of testimony from the public. So I don't understand how she can appear in a video supporting Northwest Innovation Works project, how she can go to a celebratory party, where afterwards she said she wasn't sure if there was any staff there, while in fact the senior planner, Ian Muntz, was at that same party, and we have photo documentation of that. So they had already been called upon to be the lead agency, but it hadn't been accepted yet. By November, it had been accepted, so I do not understand how there is no conflict of interest if the mayor, as the leader of the SEPA agency, who will have influence over the city manager, will have influence over city planners, how she can be in a commercial supporting Northwest Innovation Works and then still remain neutral. And my complaint really had to do not necessarily all as much as with the mayor's actions or failure thereof, but it really had to do with taking the lead agency away from the city and giving it to the state, because obviously it's not at a neutral point. And right now I'm here, I know it's a mute point, I know the methanol refinery is gone, and that's a good thing. But I'm here because we are in the same situation again, to where we have the city be the lead agency for the LNG facility. And in fact, Mayor Strickland, Councilmember Mallow, and Councilmember Woodards, all three of them wrote a letter in support of Puget Sound Energy before they accepted the lead agency. And as a community member, I feel like that's very improper to support a for-profit corporate entity before any facts have come in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we really appreciate you bringing this before us and your comments. Our code of ethics is very specific on what we have to find or what we can violate on. And that's what we have to base our decisions on. And we can't get into a discussion or comment at this time, but we appreciate your comments now. And if anyone else has any comments, yes, ma'am.
This was supposed to be a completed EIR represented by our Tacoma City Council, and the EIR was definitely to be the...
Oh, ma'am, what is your name, ma'am?
LaDonna Robertson.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Was supposed to be an impartial report, and that was in the newspaper clipping. So, again, as Claudia mentioned, the mayor urged council to remain neutral in public to protect the study's appearance of fairness. I do not see how this was done through this means of media.
Thank you. Okay, well, we appreciate you commenting on it, too. Thank you so much for taking the time to come down here. At this time, the May 2nd Board of Ethics special meeting is adjourned. Or, I'm sorry, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Sure, I'll motion.
I'll second.
All right.
Can we have a copy? Can we have a copy? May I have a copy of your training for your ethics?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Is this all 21 pages?
Were there our further options?
Yeah, we're going to be appealing that. Is this all 21 pages that was on there, or is this condensed?
Do we have an option of appeal?
There's no appeal.
So that's
the board. The board's order is final. Yes.
So you can be in a video. You can be in a video that states that you're basically for, and then
the meeting's adjourned.
So what's your way of finding? How do you come to that conclusion? Or is that secret?
Okay. Well, we have to vote to adjourn. So let's go ahead and do that.
I think
all
favor
of adjourn.
Say aye.
Yeah,
we need to get them out. We need to all vote them out.
We need to adjourn.
I think we need to have a. They're all going to go.